to switch your mobile phones off so you don't get, so people don't find out your embarrassing ringtone. And can I introduce our speaker? Nigel Peace's topic tonight is precognition, dreams and synchronicity. And I have often felt that there are mysteries about the mind, and synchronicity is one of them, where there is something in the tapestry of reality which is there to be studied and analysed. And I'm really looking forward to Nigel's take on that. Everyone has dreams, and it's a natural and popular interest. But how many of our dreams are precognitive? Again, I'll be looking forward to hearing Nigel speak about that. He himself has the qualifications, perhaps, to look at these things. He's both trained as a scientist and in philosophy. He's a school teacher in mathematics, and he has spoken elsewhere, and very successfully, because he was recommended to us for his public speaking. More than capable of introducing himself, I'll keep my remarks brief. He's written three books on topics that could be covered under the umbrella term of spirituality, and his latest book, Spirit Revelations, has been endorsed by Rupert Sheldrake, who's a favourite speaker of ours, and Rupert called this pioneering research, and Nigel has kindly offered it at a discount to members tonight of the order of 25%. He's now offering to sell it to us for only £8, and there are some supporting leaflets here. In the last few days, have been subject to spirit revelations myself. So I look forward with extreme interest to his take on that. And can we give him a big Glasgow welcome, Nigel?
Many thanks for that kind introduction. Welcome, everybody. It's such an honour to be invited to come and speak to you. I'm very, very happy about that. Especially, I have to confess to my shame, the first time I've been in your wonderful city. But it's long overdue. I'm sure I should come back, if you'll let me. And especially, thank you to you for coming out tonight, braving the cold. And I believe there's a certain important football match on tonight as well, which involves a local team. So thank you for choosing to come here instead. And I hope to entertain you with some stories. And I promise you now, you're not going to believe them. But at the same time, I promise that they are all true and they're all documented and written down. More than anything else, I hope that you're going to go away feeling a little bit inspired, that your minds are even more powerful than you ever thought they were, even more powerful than you think they are now. So, just a few words about myself. I'm getting my defence in early because you're not going to believe what I'm going to say later, so I want you to think that I'm actually quite a normal, rational sort of chap. I was lucky enough to have a good education in the West Midlands in England. I have a first degree in science and a master's degree in philosophy. But I've also worked on the factory floor and on building sites. I've been an engineer and a social worker for a while, and then for more than 30 years, until I retired just recently, a school mathematics teacher. So you're thinking, he's pretty rational, isn't he? Well, I have to say there's something a bit odd about me. From a very early age, I'm talking like 6, 7 years old, I experienced the most vivid and fascinating dreams. I was a very unusual child. My parents never had to make me go to bed. I always looked forward to it because I knew that there was a chance of an interesting dream. And there were psychic events and déjà vu experiences, fairly common, I suppose, to many people. And so you're wondering, what's odd about that? What's odd is that I took the decision at a very early age to record them all, to write them all down. And even as a child, I trained myself to wake up after an interesting dream and record it. Of course, it took a few years to learn how to interpret. I'm not suggesting that a seven-year-old is very good at interpreting dreams, but I started recording everything. Everything. I've got stacks of diaries at home full of the records. Now, why did I do that? Because I began to realize that some of these dreams were giving me important information. I'm sure all of you have had that one of those déjà vu moments. You know, you walk into a new place for the first time, you meet somebody for the first time, and you think, I've been here before. You know, I know something about this person or this place. That was happening to me a lot. And I began to think, hang on, I think I dreamed this a while ago. And because I had recorded all my dreams, I could go back and prove that, yes, I did dream it. And so as time passed, I began to realize that these dreams were telling me some important information. So let me give you an example straight away. I said I was a school teacher. Well, some years ago, the school where I was working had two old minibuses. Oh, sorry, that's me as a school teacher. I always forget that one somehow. There were two old minibuses, and the school was going to sell them off, write them off against tax, and buy some new minibuses. So I had a plan. I knew both the buses very well because I also taught sports. I'd driven both the buses, taking sports teams away. And I knew that the older bus was in better condition than the newer one. And I had a plan. I was going to buy it cheaply and convert it into a camper van for holidays. Great plan. So I went and talked to the finance man at the school and agreed a price, and we shook hands on it. That's how business used to be done in the old days. Now, the very same night, I had the following dream. I was driving home in a car from abroad, from a foreign holiday. And I came to a crossroads in my dream. And there was a man in the middle of the road with two horses for sale. A mare and a foal. And I thought, that's interesting, maybe I'll buy one of those horses. So I stopped the car, put the hazard lights on. Sorry, that's the best I could do for hazard lights. I went to talk to the man. And I was interested in buying the older horse. And we agreed a price. This is not a mathematics lesson, but try to remember this. £450 in the dream. Then I turned around and I saw the police taking my car away. So I ran after them to get my car back without buying the horse. And then I woke up. Well, if you have any experience of dreams, then you'll recognize some pretty common symbols here. Driving my car back from a holiday links in with my idea about the minibus. Crossroads always represents a decision to be made. Two horses represented the two minibuses, one older than the other. Now, significantly, horse trading is a cultural symbol for what? Dishonesty. Hazard lights obviously represent some kind of warning. The police took my car away. Incidentally, in dreams, believe it or not, the police are always helpful. I know it's difficult to accept, but in dreams, they're always on your side. So the fact that they took my car away and stopped me from buying the horse was somehow to my advantage. Well, I woke up, I recorded the dream, and I thought, well, why on earth am I being given a warning here? I had no reason whatsoever to think that anything could go wrong with the deal. I knew the finance man really well. I worked with him. We'd shaken hands, hadn't we? 7 weeks later, a notice went up on the school board. The two minibuses are going to be sold by secret auction. To this day, I have absolutely no idea why he changed his mind, why he reneged on his deal with me. He wouldn't talk to me about it. I refused to take part in the auction because the whole thing seemed dishonest. The older bus was eventually sold to somebody else for how much? Well done. £450. It's incredible. Now, this is not just some kind of vague precognition that something might go wrong with the deal, as if I'd kind of picked up some unconscious body language from the man. In my dream, I was picking up 7 weeks in advance specific information that nobody knew at the time. Nobody could possibly have known that information at the time. Moreover, just to reassure those people who say that dreaming something causes it to happen, I could not possibly have had any influence on that situation either. So, what was happening there? So you can see why I was so keen to record the dreams. I had many dreams of this sort. Some of them would warn me about difficulties in the future. Some would reassure me about situations that I found myself in, how those situations were going to work out. And of course, even though that particular situation that I'm talking about wasn't a particularly happy one, I had been warned. And therefore, I could respond to that situation in a more calm way, in a more philosophical way, and not get angry about it or resort to unseemly behaviour. I began to recognise many common symbols in my dreams. Excuse me. There are archetypal symbols, but of course some of them can be personal to us. Now, I was a school teacher and I taught mathematics, so if I was to dream about school and numbers, it doesn't necessarily mean quite the same thing as it would to somebody else, because they're everyday realities for me. I began to realise that dreaming about school was always related to emotional relationships, emotional situations. And most interesting of all, numbers always related to periods of time. Because I was by now really aware that some of my dreams were precognitive, so I wanted to know a time period involved. And my mind used numbers for that. Almost exactly 10 years ago, early in 2003, I had the following dream. Again, I was driving across a border into a new country, obviously symbolic. It was also January the 1st, and somehow, although it's not logical, I knew it was the beginning of a new school year. Okay, so I drove to some strange place I didn't know, where there's a big crowd of people gathered around, and they were looking at a tall stone tower. I stopped the car and got out, and they started talking to me, and I said, what's all this about then? They said, nobody has ever climbed this tower before. It's got 103 steps. Sorry, I'm trying not to put too much mathematics into this tonight. It's got 103 steps. Nobody's ever climbed it before. Why don't you do it? That'd be silly. Why would I want to climb your tower? And then a rather attractive, tall, blonde lady appeared at my side, took my arm and said, "Come on, let's climb the tower together." Well, what's a chap to do? So off we went up the tower, and we made it to the top, and there's a great feeling of elation and achievement and happiness. And then I woke up. Well, some of the symbolism there is fairly obvious. They're crossing into a new country, January the 1st, new school year, relationship, achievement. What's this number got to do with it? As I woke up, I looked at my bedside clock. A digital clock, and it showed 30 minutes past 4 in the morning, 4:30. Now, I'm sorry about this, but I was a mathematician, so I couldn't help lying there in bed and doing a sum. And I worked out that 103 days from New Year is April the 13th. 4:13. About a month later, I met that tall, blonde woman in real life, recognized her immediately, and our relationship began on April the 13th. So not only getting information about the future, which is reassuring and indeed happy for me, information about somebody I hadn't even met yet, information about a situation I couldn't possibly influence, because I didn't even know the person. So what we're seeing here is the power of our dreams to reach into some kind of deep level of consciousness where time is irrelevant. Yeah, time travel is real. And to receive information without using our normal senses. This is evidence that our minds are far more powerful than we might ever have imagined. Yep, we can receive information that's important to us without our senses and across time. Now look, there's nothing special about me. If I can do this, so can you. And I'll try to show you how you can. You may be wondering how I manage in the first place to remember, record, interpret the dreams. It's really a matter of intention. If you put your mind to it, literally, if you have the intention when you go to sleep of asking your mind, remember, please remember any significant dream. Wake me up after the dream so that I can remember it. Then gradually, after a little practice, it will come. It might come straight away. You just have to have the intention. That's all I did as a child. I just said to myself when I went to bed, I want to remember these dreams. And so I got woken up after the dream. Now, of course, if you have to turn on the light and reach for a piece of paper and a pen, the dream's gone, hasn't it? They're really fleeting. So we don't have to do that. In the early days, I used a little handheld tape recorder. But look, you've all got mobile phones. They've got voice recorders on them. That's all you need at the side of the bed. You wake up after a dream, you reach for the phone, you mumble into it the basic details that you can remember of your dream, and then in the morning, you play it back and record it. Keep a record of these dreams, and gradually they begin to make more and more sense. How to interpret? Well, there are many good books on dream interpretation. There are many bad ones as well. From the beginning, I used a book called The Dream Dictionary. It's a very simple A to Z dream dictionary by Stern and Corbett. It's still in print, and it's the best one I've ever found. There are others, of course. But all you need to do is get yourself a good dream dictionary and start learning the symbolism. Some of it is very obvious. Some of it will be personal to you. But it doesn't take long to begin to see the theme of your dreams. In Tibetan yoga, they call the dreaming process blind horse, lame rider. The blind horse is our life force, the chi. It's full of power, it's full of energy, but of itself it has no direction. It is just power. The lame rider, of course, is our mind, full of creativity and imagination, full of ideas and purpose. You put the lame rider onto the blind horse and away you go. You put the mind in harness with the life force, and in dreams you can take the mind anywhere. Now, of course, not every dream is going to be special of the sort that I've been talking about. In 50-odd years that I've been studying my own dreams, I've come to recognize about four essential categories of dreams. And they usually occur in this order during the night. So the first dream of the night is usually what I would call the filing dream. Now, during the day, we're picking up all kinds of information that we can't consciously register. Our eyes are bringing in impressions from all over the place that we're not focusing on. We're hearing things subliminally. All kinds of things are happening during the day. And the brain's got to sort all that information out. So the first dream of the night is generally going to be recapping previous day or so's events. You'll be remembering things that have happened, probably in a jumbled sort of order. As the brain tries to work out whether it's worthwhile storing that information or recycling it, as it were. These sort of dreams are not very interesting. They don't tell us very much, except you might pick up something that you've missed consciously the day before. But on the other hand, if it was important, you would have picked it up. Then the second dream of the night, generally speaking, is what I will call spring cleaning. Having gathered in this new information, then we need to compare that with all the old information that's already been stored in our memories. It's the kind of thing that we do in our conscious daily lives anyway, isn't it? Or we get all this kind of information coming through the letterbox, coming through the computer screen, coming through the telephone, the conversations. We get all kinds of information. We've got to sort it out. Some of it gets thrown away, some of it gets stored, and then we realise we can't move in the spare room for all the stored information, so we've got to get rid of some of that as well. So the second dream will be a mixture of old memories, old experiences, and newer things, all jumbled together. And they can be very weird dreams indeed. But you will recognize them as past experiences. If you're very lucky, you might then get what I call a therapy dream, what you probably call a nightmare. A therapy dream is having done all of the office work that I've been talking about, the unconscious mind might have some important information for you. Because, of course, the unconscious mind knows what's going on, for example, inside your body at the cellular level. It might know that something's starting to go wrong. It might want to warn you. It will want to warn you before things develop. So this is the kind of dream from which you wake up with your heart pounding, you're probably sweating, and you sit bolt upright in bed and you think, what was that about? It's dramatic. And generally we try to wipe it away, we try to pretend it hasn't happened. because it's disturbing. You mustn't do that. You mustn't do that. If you get a nightmare, it's telling you something important. Could be that you've recently met a group of people, or you've had got a new job or something like that, and there's somebody there who's not trustworthy. Somebody who's acting against your interests, but it's not obvious. You haven't noticed it, except you will have noticed it unconsciously, subliminally. And then the brain, the mind rather, will try to tell you in a dramatic sort of dream that there are people out there you should not be trusting. They could be dreams of attack, for example. Don't pretend they're not happening. These dreams are important. And if you ignore them, they'll come back again in another form. Now, if only life were that simple. Of course, any dream can be a mixture of all the different sorts of dream. Let's suppose I dream that the doorbell rings and the postman's there with a package for me. This looks exciting. The doorbell rings. News. Package shows, I rip open the brown paper and it's a painting. It's a painting of a masked figure. It's quite interesting. But then in the dream, the figure steps out of the painting and comes towards me and has a knife pointing at my stomach. Well, clearly, it's a warning dream, isn't it? It's a warning news. I'm going to hear something. It's a warning that there's somebody who should not be trusted. But then I remember, before I went to bed, I was watching this arts program on TV. And I drank some rather sour red wine that gave me a pain in the stomach. And that's all the dream was. It's a fighting dream. The most interesting dreams, of course, are what, for want of a better word, I'm going to call clairvoyance. They're the kind that I've just been talking about earlier. Now, these are usually late into the night, early hours of the morning, and they can be very long and episodic with an interesting story. And sometimes the story will jump around from one place to another, but they're always going to be full of interesting symbolism of the type that I've described in my examples so far. These are the dreams that we really want to try and remember and interpret, because they're giving us some kind of information. Having sorted out all of the less interesting information, filed it away, done some spring cleaning, told you what you need to know that may be hidden, now we're telling, the mind is telling us something really important and useful for us, as I think the examples show. So these are the ones that we need to try to remember. Also, of course, don't forget that as we wake up, there is frequently what is called the hypnopompic experience, that state of mind just between sleep and wakefulness. And at that level of consciousness, we very often will find that we receive important information. It could be in the form of a voice, or a song, or seeing a poster, for example, with something written on it. If you have that kind of experience just as you're waking up, it's really significant. I told you a while ago about the dream of the tower and the 103 steps and all of that, what that meant. As I woke up from that dream, I had a song in my head. And it was by a group that no longer exists called Strange Love. And the song was called Visionary. How appropriate. What seems to be happening then is we're taking at night a dip into the stream of the inner consciousness. Think of the inner consciousness as a kind of a flowing river. We're going down below the surface to where the currents really have their effect. Most of our lives we live on the surface, and there are waves, a few waves and eddies, but the real power of the river is underneath. And at night we seem to be able to dip down below the surface to that point and recognize the rhythm of our lives, the patterns of our lives, where they might be taking us, to whom they might be taking us. What's important about this is that when we take notice of those experiences, this kind of dream, we realize that life genuinely is meaningful, purposeful. And therefore, if we invite this kind of experience into our lives, we begin to live more spiritually, more mindfully. I have to say that I've often wondered whether there might be a fifth kind of dream. That doesn't originate from one's own mind, but from an external source. I hesitate to talk about it in those terms, trained as a scientist, but see what you make of it. There was a time when I was involved with a particular person, and I wasn't sure about whether I could trust that person, but everything seemed all right. And then I had a dream in which I was boarding a ship. And I had my bag over my shoulder and my ticket in my hand. I was about to go on a voyage. The person I was just mentioned was sitting to one side, not doing anything, just sitting there. Somebody jostled me and I almost lost the bag. Then somebody went past me and said, "You shouldn't be on this ship." I ignored it. I went forward, I handed in my ticket, I was on the ship. Then out of the corner of my eye, out on the deck, I saw a figure dressed all in white. And in these dreams, the figures are always dressed all in white. He was beckoning to me, "Come out to the deck." "What's the matter? What's the matter? Why should I go out there?" Come out to the deck." So I went out to the deck and he immediately started moving to the stern of the ship, beckoning me. And it was obvious he was trying to get me to get off the ship. And he even threw me a rope. And as I caught the rope, he pulled it. And he was trying to pull me off the ship. And I was reluctant. And then he jumped into the water to show me it's not deep. You can still get off. It's perfectly safe. And I ignored him. And the ship set sail. And a month later, that situation with that particular person exploded in my face in a very nasty way. I had the warning and I ignored it. We do make mistakes sometimes. But who was that figure in white? Another time, I was feeling a little uncertain about spirituality, my spiritual path. It can be difficult, can't it, to try to live in a spiritual way. Other people give you a hard time. You make mistakes like I just described myself making. And you wonder, is it all worthwhile? Now, this isn't the greatest picture, but I'll try to explain what happened. One night, I was having these feelings. I went to sleep and I had the most vivid dream in which I was totally alert, as if I were awake. And I was looking at a picture much nicer than that. I was looking at, as it were, a huge night sky with lots of bright lights. And I knew that the brightest light in the center represented me. and all of the other lights, stars, represented other people and situations in my life. And some of them were joined by lines, and some of the lines were stronger than others. So I already knew, looking at the picture, roughly what it represented. It represented life and all our connections. But then, suddenly, some kind of being appeared at my side, just behind my right shoulder in the dream, and spoke to me in a very clear voice. And this is what he said. In our lives, we experience many situations and relationships, and that's all those connections between the lights. Some of these are vital for our growth, while others are practice. Yes, of course, in our lives, not every situation, not every relationship is as important as every other. But here's the key. While we live, we cannot know which are which. In other words, hey, yes, okay, so you're having a hard time. You're not sure whether it's worthwhile. You're not sure if you're living with good people. But you never can be sure. What's important is the faith to keep going and keep trying to do what you believe is right. And the punchline is, in every moment, we must try to be the best we can be. Because we never know who we're with, how important the situation is. You can be walking down the street in the centre of Glasgow and you don't know who's just walked past you. You don't know that could be the most wonderful spiritual healer in the city. I don't know who you are. Do you know who you're sitting next to? Anyone here could be an angel. We don't know, that's the point. We don't know how important people and situations are. So if we're going to try to live a spiritual life, in every moment we have to try to be the best we can. Okay, now, Scots are famously sceptical, aren't they? So I know what some of you are thinking. You're only seeing what you want to see. You're ascribing significance to things that just isn't there. Only seeing what you want to see. Well, my answer to that is, if you close your eyes, you're not going to see anything anyway. It seems to me that the single most important reason why human beings have become so successful, okay, we mess up sometimes, but let's face it, we're a pretty incredibly successful species in lots of ways, is because of our curiosity. Because we want to discover things, we want to learn, we want to make things happen, we want to improve things. It's that curiosity that makes us such a successful species. And in order to be successful in our curiosity, we must have open minds. Is it not profoundly unintelligent to dismiss something simply because we don't understand it? Is there anyone here who thinks that 1/5 of the world's population is speaking gibberish simply because we can't understand Mandarin? Physicists, the most eminent physicists in the world, will admit they have no idea what the nature of light is. The most eminent biologists, Rupert Sheldrake has been mentioned, I talked to him, no idea at all how a living cell knows whether it should turn into a heart muscle or a big toe. No idea how it happened. Personally, I think mobile phones work purely on magic. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? You just press a few buttons and you can speak to Australia. Now, that's magic, isn't it? There are so many things we don't understand. We don't dismiss them simply because we don't understand them. We have an open mind. But of course, let's not forget, we're at a frontier here. This kind of thing that I'm talking about tonight is nothing less than a frontier. We're talking about the nature of consciousness, the nature of time. What is spirit? These are the most fundamental and profound questions facing any human being. So, it would be really unintelligent to close our minds to the possibilities of what can be achieved here. I've been talking about dreams, and a very ancient saying is that to dream is to wake up to reality. Well, I'd like to suggest that there are, turn it on its head, I'd like to suggest that there are other ways in which we can dip into that inner stream of consciousness in our waking lives. And I'm sure everybody here has experienced at least once that kind of wonderful moment when you've had a problem in your mind, something you're really anxious about, something you're worrying about, you don't know quite what to do, but then suddenly you turn on the radio or the TV and you hear something. Or you open a book at random and you read something. Or you're sitting in a cafe and they're having a conversation at the next table that you overhear. And it makes sense. And you know what to do with your problem. And this is called synchronicity. When something significant happens out of the blue. If we have our ears and our eyes open to the possibility. When I was a young man, I was brought up as a Christian, but like many teenagers, that didn't satisfy me. And I began to look around, and I became involved in the spiritualist church for a while, when I was about 18, 19. And I joined a development circle because a couple of mediums said to me that I should. And so this was the very beginning of my interest in spiritualism. And I have to say that I was given a really hard time at home about it. My father was a conservative in every sense of the word, and he would literally mock me for my interests in alternative ideas and philosophies. He was an engineer. And one particular Saturday night, I headed off to the circle, and yes, sure enough, he gave me a really bad time as I left the house. A couple of hours later, I was sitting in the front room with my cup of tea thinking he might have a point, because this development circle was going nowhere. Absolutely nothing was happening. And we were sitting there having our tea and cake. And I was by far the youngest one there. I felt a little bit nervous, so I sat by myself. And then I started to get these pictures in my head, and they wouldn't go away. And the picture was of myself standing behind one of the other ladies and putting my hands on her head because she was wearing a neck collar. Now, this lady was a hospital nurse. But despite that, nobody at the hospital had been able to help her with the injury, and she was in great pain. Wearing the neck collar and talking away, as she always did, about how difficult her life was. Well, I shook my head, but these pictures wouldn't go away. So eventually I said to the leader of the circle, who was a healer, look, I had this image. Maybe you could offer this lady spiritual healing. And she refused. I said, no, it's your picture, you've got to do it. Me? Yeah, I was 19, I didn't know anything about this. But she insisted, and she threatened me that I wouldn't have any more cake unless I did. So I thought, what have I got to lose? So I went and stood behind the lady and put my hands on her head, as I saw in the picture, and she immediately went to sleep, which was a bonus. And she woke up about 10 minutes later, took the neck brace off, pain's gone, my first experience of spiritual healing. Nobody was more stunned than me. But that's not the interesting thing that happened that evening. As I was driving home later, still rather stunned, I realised as I approached my road, I'd been following the same car all the way. And I noticed its registration number. Yep, you're ahead of me. And I couldn't help reading it as a Bible reference. You all got it by now? Yeah, Gospel of Luke, chapter 8, verse 53. I thought, well, I suppose I'd better look that up when I get home. It refers to a passage in which Jesus heals a woman whom everyone had believed to be beyond hope, and the crowd had stood around and mocked. The synchronicity of that with what I had experienced earlier in the evening was just so incredible. It really shook me, and I was thinking to myself, where has this come from? It obviously has to be meaningful, and the meaning of it has to be reassurance to me that despite my thoughts that nothing was happening, I was in the right place. That I should persevere. I told nobody about it because I was just too stunned. I'd never heard of anything of that sort happening before. And even that's not the most interesting thing. Because almost exactly 1 year later, the same thing happened again. I was at the Circle on a Saturday night, and a neighbour called in unexpectedly asking for healing. And I was pressed into service, and it worked. And as I was driving home that night, I found myself following another car with a Luke registration. And that was Luke 9:46, chapter 9, verses 4-6. Jesus gathers his disciples together and sends them out preaching and healing. That's like a direct kick up the bum, isn't it? That's like I'm being told, look, we told you a year ago that you were on the right path. Now go out there and do it. I felt quite small. And even that's not the most interesting thing that happened, because the next day I went to a spiritualist church service. I don't know, I suppose many of you, if not all of you, have been to a spiritualist church before. Just in case you haven't, it's very similar to a normal church service. There are hymns, prayers. But instead of a preacher, there would be a clairvoyant medium who would generally give an address and then a demonstration of clairvoyance. And the address can be on anything. It could be something that she's thought up in the car on the way to the church. It could be something based on something that happened to her the week before. I say her, it's usually a woman. It could be based on a reading from a book, any book. Spiritualist church is very open. This day, the medium was a lady I hadn't seen before. She was brilliant. And she stood up and she gave a reading, a talk, based on a Bible reference. And it was precisely the same chapter and verse that I'd seen on the car registration number the night before. You can imagine the state that I was in by this time. Now, since then, that kind of thing has happened to me very frequently, hundreds of times. I mean, Carl Jung was famously hot on synchronicity, written books full of good examples. He seems to have missed the car registration number case. It seems to be a kind of a personal version of synchronicity that I get. And it happens very frequently. So, for example, something like that would be a reference to the Gospel of Mark, quite often Bible references. Book of Daniel is a good one because Daniel was pretty good on dreams, so that links in really nicely. Job had a bit of an up-and-down life, of course, so the messages from Job are quite varied. Most of these references, by the way, will be, again, reassurance about some important event that's going on in my life at the time. Nearly always precognitive. The Acts of the Apostles is full of good stories. That's a nice one. Pretty rare. That always, always means that something significant and happy is going to come along in the next few days. These sort of synchronicities are precognitive over a short period of time. That's a happy one. That's not. That's the opposite. I don't like the new car numbers, do you? You can't read them the same way. But this kind of thing was happening over a period of many years. In my book, by the way, there's more than 100 documented examples of precognitive dreams, proven precognitive dreams, and about 400 examples of synchronicities, of which this is a particular kind. Oh, it's just a coincidence, you're saying, aren't you? it's you're seeing what you want to see again. This is just coincidence. Well, as it happens, I know a bit about coincidence, because remember, I was a maths teacher, and I taught statistics at A-level. And there are some wonderful examples of genuine coincidence, of course, which you may know. Do you know the one about Abraham Lincoln? Abraham Lincoln was elected President of the United States in 1860 and was later assassinated in the Ford Theatre. John Kennedy was elected President of the United States in 1960 and was later assassinated in a Ford Lincoln car. Coincidence. It doesn't mean anything. Unless you're a conspiracy theorist, perhaps. A great one is was told by the writer William Burroughs in the 1960s. William Burroughs lived a lot of his time in Tangier, and a good period of that time in the bars of Tangier. And he told a story of drinking one night in a bar in Tangier with a sea captain, Captain Clark, who boasted to William Burroughs that he'd run the ferry between Tangiers and Spain, for 23 years without ever having an accident. That night, the ferry sank and Captain Clark drowned. Next day, William Burroughs picked up an American newspaper and read that the same night, Flight 23 from Eastern Airlines had crashed, killing everyone on board, including the pilot, Captain Clark. Synchronous disasters. Same name, same number, same time. It's just a coincidence. There's no significance in that. These are wonderful examples of coincidence, but they don't teach us anything about the nature of life. They don't help us in our lives to understand how to live better. I'm supposing two couples go to a party. They've never met each other before. They go to a party. You probably were at this party. And both women were wearing the same dress. And they got talking, and they found that they'd named their children with the same names. And their husbands were born in the same town. It's just a coincidence. It doesn't mean anything. On the other hand, there is synchronicity. We do have to be very careful about ascribing significance to things that actually have no importance at all. There's a word for that, by the way, it's called apophenia. Apophenia is when we believe something is important and significant for us, but actually it's random chance. Suppose the centre here tested the fire alarm system and it failed. There are two responses to that situation. We could think the system is faulty. It must be replaced. We replace the system completely. And then it turns out that it was just a loose wire. Statisticians, who are not known for their creativity, call that a type 1 error. A type 1 error is believing something to be significant when it isn't. Just random chance or something small. On the other hand, we could assume that the fire alarm system has failed because of a loose wire, do nothing about it, they will fix it tomorrow, but actually there's a significant fault in the system. Guess what statisticians call that? It's not very creative. It's a type 2 error when we don't recognize that something really is important. I put it to you, which kind of error is more important? If we replace the system when we didn't need to, we've wasted some money. If we don't replace the system when we should, we could be wasting some lives. So, if a synchronicity apparently occurs in our lives, something occurs and we believe it's really significant, but actually it turns out that it's not, okay, we've made a mistake. We feel a bit silly. But it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. On the other hand, if our minds are trying to give us some really important and significant information that we need to know, and we ignore it, then it could be very dire consequences for us. Supposing, like I suggested before, it was one of those medical conditions developing within the body, and the mind finds a way of giving us that information consciously, but we ignore it. It's going to get worse. So, what I'm saying is, we should be happily living with open minds and not worrying about making mistakes from time to time. Yep, we're going to feel silly occasionally, but it doesn't really matter compared with missing important information. When it does work out, and we realize the significance of something, then we know how important life is. Then we know that our lives have a purpose, and we know that our minds are powerful. And that can be a life-changing realization. Brought me here today. Again, I have to wonder whether there is another kind of synchronicity. that originates from outside ourselves. All of the examples that I've suggested so far, I think, are to do with our own minds, our own conceptions. But maybe there's something else. I don't know how many of you might remember that a few years ago, there was a TV program called Catfile. Derek Jacobi was the monk in medieval monastery who liked doing a bit of detective work on the side. I just loved that program. And one night I was watching it, and they depicted something which is called trial by Bible. I don't know how many people know about this, but it was a common practice in the Middle Ages that when somebody was accused of a crime and there was insufficient evidence, they would be brought before a priest or a bishop, whoever the highest churchman was available, and that man would then pray concerning the case, pray for guidance, and then go to the Bible and open it randomly with his eyes closed and put his finger on a page, and that passage was supposed to suggest guidance on the case, the crime. They really believed in spiritual synchronicity in the Middle Ages. I thought this was fascinating. Not only that, though, as I was watching this, I got that familiar rush of energy in my solar plexus, which was telling me, this is important. You should notice this. Probably many of you have had that feeling. Now, at the time, I was seriously considering giving up all the recording that I had done of dreams and synchronicities, because it, as I suggested earlier, it does get on top of you from time to time. If you're recording everything that happens and looking for connections and making mistakes sometimes, and I was really tired. So, after the program finished, I went upstairs, quietened myself down, and I asked the question, is my spiritual path worthwhile? Took the Bible, opened it at random with my eyes closed, and put my finger on a page. And I read John chapter 12, verse 37. In spite of all the signs he had given them, still they did not believe him. Another kick up the backside. How much more evidence do you need? Well, I told you a little while ago that I didn't have a good relationship with my father. By the way, you are not going to believe this story. He was a difficult man. I suppose I wasn't a terribly easy child either. And he died about 20 years ago. And at first, to my shame, I felt quite relieved. The tension's gone, you know. But of course it hasn't, because there's unresolved issues in the mind. And for years afterwards, I still had a lot of bad feelings towards my father, a lot of anger and resentment. Well, fast forward 10 years, and it's June time, approaching the summer holidays, and I'm looking forward to going on a camping holiday with my car. Very reliable French car. Never had any trouble with it at all. Until now. Suddenly, it developed a rather strange electrical fault. The engine would misfire sometimes. The car wouldn't start sometimes. And then it would. Stuff like that. four different garages failed to diagnose what was wrong with this car, and it began to look like I wasn't going to go on holiday. Well, I returned home, I think, from the fourth fruitless garage trip, drove into my the drive in front of my house, and there on the doorstep was a large white feather and a dirty piece of paper. Now, I know what you're thinking. Yeah, the white feather is a sign of an angel's presence, isn't it? No, it's not. Birds are always dropping their feathers everywhere. On the other hand, this was a big one, and it was on my doorstep, and I couldn't really ignore it. So I picked up the dirty piece of paper, and it turned out to be a flyer for a spiritualist church that I didn't know about, only a few miles away. Even more remarkable, I discovered a couple of days later, when I went there, this flyer was years out of date. They'd changed all the times and the days of the meetings years ago. So how did that piece of paper even exist, let alone find its way onto my doorstep? Well, it seemed like a synchronicity, didn't it? It seemed like a kind of sign that I ought to take notice of. Go to the spiritualist church. So I found out when the next meeting was going to be, in about 3 days' time, and decided I would go there in the evening. As I left my house, there was another dirty piece of paper on the doorstep. And there was a date on this one. It was 7 months old. And it was a scrap of paper torn out of a child's school diary. And on it was written, handwritten, commendation for history. What's this doing here? This seems to be suggesting something to do with the past. And it's obviously connected with this church. So off I went to the church. A couple of hours later, I was driving home feeling absolutely stupid, because that evening was everything bad that spiritualism can be. I'm sorry, but we all know, sometimes it just isn't working. The medium's having a bad hair day. The medium that evening gave an address. She hadn't prepared it. It was nonsense. Nobody that she spoke to could pick any of the information that she gave. Absolutely nobody. It was a bad evening. I went home feeling stupid. On the other hand, I found myself driving behind a car with a Bible registration number plate. And this reference said, referred to healing on the Sabbath. This is a real test of faith. Huh? Like I said, we make mistakes sometimes, we feel silly. I'd already made a few mistakes, I was feeling silly, and I was being challenged again. Go back to the church on Sunday. Okay, one more try. Sunday afternoon, I do a little bit of art. So Sunday afternoon, I was working on a painting which was called Grace. I arrived at the church to find that the medium's name was Grace. In fact, the first lady she spoke to later that evening in the service was also called Grace. The medium was wearing an identical, very unusual T-shirt to mine. I'd never seen anybody wear one like that before. She had the same T-shirt as me. But coincidence. I sat myself at the back. I wasn't really expecting very much, as you can imagine. Sat myself at the back with my eyes closed and just sort of, let's get it over with. Well, Grace Kennedy is brilliant. She's the most brilliant medium I've ever come across in my life. She lives in Essex, by the way. She still works. She never asked any questions of anybody. She gave names, dates, descriptions, pertinent messages, and everything she said was accepted by everybody that she spoke to. And then I heard her say, and now I want to talk to the gentleman at the back who's pretending to be asleep. And just at that moment, I felt my father come and stand next to me. Now, I'm not a spiritualist, but there's no denying that feeling. When it is somebody who shared your life, you know what they feel like. And he was standing next to me. And Grace Kennedy said, "You know your father's just come to stand next to you, don't you?" And she gave names, she gave description, she gave information about the family that I didn't know, and I had to check later, and it was true. And then the point of it was, she said, "Your father has come because he wants to say that he's proud of you. And he's sorry that he never said it when he was alive." And his whole life he never used the word sorry in my hearing. And instantly, and I mean instantly, all of the anger and the resentment and the bad feeling melted. It was a complete instant healing, which persists to this day. A complete forgiveness. And I feel not only close to, but also very happy with my father now, 10 years later. That's not the end of the story. I still had a problem with the car, didn't I? Remember that if the car hadn't developed that fault, I would have been in France instead of in that church. Well, I decided I had to bite the bullet and take the car to the main dealer in England, because none of the other garages could fix the car. I was terrified at how much it was going to cost. Took the car in, the mechanic came out after a while, shaking his head. "We've never seen this fault before. No idea what's wrong with your car. We're going to have to phone the engineers in France for some help. I'm going to have to sell the car to pay for the repairs." Then he suddenly said, "Oh, just a minute, I've had a thought." And he disappeared off again. And he came back in 10 minutes with a big smile on his face. "Said, I fixed it, you can go." "What?" "Said, you can go, no charge." "But what did you do?" He said, "I'm not supposed to tell you this, but I hacked into the computer and I reset everything. And the faults disappeared." And he was so happy with himself, he wouldn't charge me a penny. The car was fixed instantly, just like I'd been fixed instantly a couple of weeks before. And as I drove away from the garage, the first car I saw had my father's initials on the number plate. And right behind it, the next car... Divine intervention, paternal intervention. Surely I didn't make all that happen. Didn't come from my mind, did it? Well, what is the source of all of these kind of phenomena? Where do they come from? I've been suggesting that our minds are immensely powerful. Like we can reach out beyond space and time. But what about this kind of experience? Do we believe that the afterlife is full of office blocks where techies sit at keyboards with Bible in one hand, A to Z in the other, somehow redirecting the North London traffic on the off chance that I might notice a registration plate? I don't think so. Do we believe that each of us has a Native American shaman shadowing us everywhere, ready to give us a nudge when it's time to turn on the TV or open a book at a significant moment? Doesn't seem realistic. Do we believe that there are laboratories full of inscrutable Chinese magi developing dreams for us and somehow incepting them, I believe that's the new word, incepting them into our sleep at night? Now, come on. If they were that clever, they'd have found a better way to communicate with us. Incidentally, some people do have funny ideas about the afterlife, and so did I. And so I wrote some of those ideas into my first comedy novel, which is which is also here for you as The Signs of Life. And it takes those ideas of angelic or less than angelic intervention a little bit further. No. We can't deny the belief in spirit guides. And of course, many people believe very seriously in angels. And I don't know what to make of those sort of experiences, to be honest. But what I do want to suggest tonight is that the kind of dreams that I've been describing, and most of the synchronous activities that I've been describing, are nothing to do with spirits intervening in our lives. It is our own consciousness. We are able to dip down into the depths of consciousness to a level at which we are all connected energetically, one with another and with every situation, and apparently across time as well. But I think I've proved tonight that precognition exists. Our minds are far more powerful than we ever thought possible. There is that level of knowing under the surface. We don't even have to be asleep. We can be driving a car, walking down the street, and we can touch that level of consciousness. You don't have to do 25 years of meditation in a Himalayan mountain in order to achieve this level. You don't have to be a Native American shaman or a witch. Everyone can touch that consciousness. I can, so can you. How can we encourage it to happen? Well, I think I made it very clear that the first priority to my thinking is that we must have an open mind. We must believe that these things are possible. And I hope that the evidence that I've suggested this evening is enough. We have to be prepared to accept that almost anything is possible, that almost any situation is significant, that almost every person we meet is important. That's what it means to live with an open mind. Anything could be important. But more than that, we must have the intention to learn from these experiences. By which I mean, we must allow them to affect us, to affect our lives. Look, most of us don't like change. We're happy as we are. It's uncomfortable when life changes. But sometimes, if we're going to live spiritually, we have to accept that our experiences can change us on the spiritual path. And that's what I mean by intention, learning in a very deliberate way. I've been a school teacher, and I can tell you from experience, the teacher, whoever or whatever it is here, will soon give up and go away if the student has no intention of learning. And the most difficult thing, I think, that we need to do is to try and trust this guidance that we receive, whether it comes through a dream or a synchronicity, as I've been describing. It's really hard to do that because we know we're going to get it wrong sometimes. We know that other people are going to give us a hard time and make us feel silly. Because lots of people like to put down those who try to live spiritually. It's the hardest thing in the world, even if you accept that these things can happen and that they're meaningful, to go with it and trust it and let it live through your own life. What it all comes down to, I guess, is that buzzword, mindfulness. Just trying to live in every moment with an open mind, thoughtfully believing that life is important. Because you just have to have one experience of the kind that I've been describing to be convinced that your mind is powerful and that your life has a purpose. Being human is a really special thing. Thank you.
Take a few questions.
Sure.
Okay, we have a few minutes. Questions for Nigel.
You may have explained this, but I'm not sure. Your fascinating examples of significant number plates and so on, how can that be explained by the depths of your consciousness? It is something external to you.
That's an excellent question. And it's an excellent question that Carl Jung spent most of his life and career trying to figure out.
Yes, right.
The best answer that he came up with is the existence of synchronicity.
Yes.
The phrase that he turned. Now, what the mechanism might be for that, which is the heart of your question, we have no idea, except that it seems that our minds can somehow affect the world around us.
Yes.
We can come into correspondence with other things in the outside world that are meaningful to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the energy of synchronicity. Now, I'm not suggesting that my mind is causing that number plate. That number plate exists.
Mm-hmm.
And because its meaningfulness corresponds to my mind's thoughts, we come into correspondence together. It's a bit like saying, when you set yourself on a spiritual path, the universe will bring you what you need and bring the people that you need towards you. But you have to have that intention. You have to have a strong intention and a mindfulness. And it's not the same thing as cosmic ordering, which I think is a rather false way of expressing desire. No, we're talking about here just the intention to live a worthwhile and spiritual life, and then what we need comes by synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the energy of that, the mechanism of that, I'm sorry, I have no idea.
Thank you.
There's another question.
Thank you. I have one reading a year from AA to AA, and that's it. Yesterday I had that reading, and prior to having that reading, my partner Stephanie went in before lunch and had an excellent reading from this lady, who she's never met, and neither have I. After lunch, an hour later, I go in and have a reading from the same lady, who excellent reading. The odd thing is, in the 14 card spread of the tarot card deck, all the cards are the same for her readings as well as mine. Two different people, totally synchronized.
I feel you deserve a round of
applause. That is utterly extraordinary. It's wonderful. And it just seemed to suggest that you're in harmony with your partner. I've heard of that happening once before, something similar. Not with between two people, but with one lady who was setting out on a spiritual path, didn't know much about it at the time, and went to see a tarot reader for the first time, who asked her to choose seven cards, which she duly did, and the tarot reader said, I feel uncomfortable with those. Could you shuffle the pack and take another seven cards? Which she duly did, and they were the identical seven cards again, in the same order. When synchronicity is meant to happen, it comes through in quite a dramatic way sometimes.
It does, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's a lovely story. Yeah. Incidentally, sorry, on my website, take my card. There's an invitation to anybody to submit their own examples of synchronicity or dreams, and hopefully gather them together and publish them. If you'd like to do that.
Question up.
Hi.
You mentioned that in some of your dreams you frequently see a figure in white who seems to be a guide of some kind.
Yeah.
Is that a male or female? And is it the same person in each dream? Can you relate it to someone perhaps who has passed away, someone's died?
Okay. This kind of dream has occurred probably six or seven times for me. It's not frequent. It's always a male figure, sometimes more than one at a time. And I've never been able to recognize or even to see the features of the person. I can see that it is a being dressed all in white, but I've never been able to see the features, except to feel that it's a male presence. There was a wonderful example early in my 20s, I think it was, when my life was slightly chaotic, and I dreamt that I was driving a bus at night, very fast, far too fast, through some mountain passes, very dangerously, and somehow, a group of these white figures, white-dressed figures, got themselves onto the bus and managed to take control of it from me. But there were about four of them on that occasion. Yes, these figures are always totally in white, and they're always completely helpful. Has anybody else experienced that? White figures in white? I can't be the only one.
Perhaps a last question before we finish.
All the numbers in the cars are all running sequence 1, 2, 3.
Oh no, that was just an example. Sorry, I just put those numbers up as an example. They could be any numbers.
Right.
Okay. Because I didn't want to suggest that those were specific ones, and then you'd all go home and look them up. No, I just put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on, just as examples. Yeah, yeah. Sorry about that.
The letters were correct, though, weren't
they? The letters were correct,
they
were accurate,
but
yes.
The digits were random.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, folks, it falls upon me to express in your behalf our thanks this evening. But just before I do that, I would like to repeat the information that I said I would about forthcoming events. There are three to draw to your attention. First of all, on the 21st of March, Partickborough Halls, Room 10, Malcolm McQueen will be speaking about Theosophy and the beginnings of the movement. Our next lecture is here on Wednesday, the 3rd of April, and that's Richard Wiseman on explaining the inexplicable. And our evening of mediumship, which is our a major fundraiser for us, is 7:30 p.m. on Thursday the 25th of April in the Boyd Orr building, and it's £10, and for that you get not just one but three mediums. If you have any questions about society, if you're a visitor, then feel free to speak to the council members up the back of the hall. If you wish to order any tickets, even reserve tickets, for the fundraiser evening, then you can also do that at the back of the hall. I think the tickets are actually there if you want to buy them tonight as well. And I would just direct your attention to our book stall, which is available to you at the beginning and tonight also at the end of our event. Yes?
You mentioned at the beginning you were going to tell us about the dedication of Chiroi. You haven't given any time when you mentioned it.
I haven't mentioned it just now, no. Earlier on I mentioned the memorial service for Archie Roy is at 2:30 p.m. A week tomorrow, that's next Thursday, and it's in Glasgow University Chapel. And I think it will be well attended. There are many, many people who have been waiting patiently for an opportunity to remember and honour Archie. I wonder if our past secretary, who has, of course, a particular affinity with Archie, would like to add anything. Trish?
Just the timing. It's 2:30. Everybody's welcome. You don't need to be a member. The 2:30 sharp at Glasgow University Chapel. And there is going to be a small reception, which I think will be a roofing later on. And everybody's invited to that as well. So please do come along and show your respect and admiration for Archie.
I hear it's the sharp.
When the main gate of Glasgow University, the top of the hill, turn right and then left and straight ahead. The main gate of Glasgow
I think that what we've heard tonight has coincidental links, perhaps, with many famous people. It was Shakespeare who said, "To sleep perchance, to dream, aye, well, there's the rub, for in that sleep of death, what dreams may come." Well, we're in privileged company because Nigel Peace Tonight has said, "Yeah, let's think about sleep. Let's not wait till death." And he has spoken about the dreams that may come before we die. So he may not have thought himself as thinking along Shakespearean lines, but clearly that's one link. And the famous poet of the Beat Generation, Jack Kerouac, said that all human beings are also dream beings. And it's dreaming that ties all mankind together. And again, there's another link with what you've been saying tonight about the fact that at some deep level of consciousness, we're all connected. For myself, personally, I was listening to the power of Nigel's narrative. Sometimes touching, amusing, but very personal, very sincere, authentic. And yet, he pointed out, and sometimes on the screen, very attractive graphics, he pointed out the evidence for yourselves, just in case you thought he was putting some kind of slant on it. The synchronicity or the meaningful coincidence was there for you to reflect on. And I think that I'll never look at number plates the same again. I'll constantly be looking and trying to decode them. And I may well not thank you for that if I end up in an accident as a result. And tonight's been laced with a sprinkling of humour. It took a very long time for Nelson Mandela to come to the conclusion that Nigel gave us so easily in his delivery tonight. Because after being in prison for over 20 years, in his inauguration speech in becoming the president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela was forced to conclude that it's not our fear of inadequacy that most bothers us. It's our fear that we will realise our minds are far more powerful than we know. took him a long time in prison to come to that conclusion. Nigel slipped it in mid-sentence so easily. We have been given thought-provoking and potentially transformative messages tonight. Let's show that we appreciate them. And the books here are only £8. I'll buy one for the SSPR library, but you'll want your own copy.
Thank you.
Yeah.